Welcome to the Swim and Tell Spotlight. I am Jamie Bailey, and today I am with Coach Jeff Dugdale, Director of Swimming at Queen's University of Charlotte. Coach Dugdale, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thank you for having me, Jamie. I appreciate it.
All right, let's start with a bit of background of the success that you've had at Queen's. Queen's is a Division I team that swims in the Atlantic Sun Conference, where you finished second last year at conference championships for both your men's and women's teams. This season will be your third season as a Division I program. Prior to that, you won seven consecutive NCAA Division II national championships as a team, which is simply remarkable. In 14 years at Queen's, you have racked up 14 NCAA team championships between your men's and women's teams, 124 individual NCAA championships, and 735 NCAA All-American swims. The success you've had at the championship level speaks for itself. Here's my question. If I am a high school recruit looking to swim in college, why else should Queen's be at the top of my list?
That's a great question. I feel strongly because Queen's is so unique in many ways that it's a smaller, intimate school in a big city, but right in the shadows of the big city, literally 1.5 miles away from Uptown Charlotte, the 14th largest city, fourth fastest growing, which gives us a great living laboratory to gain valuable experience and move and matriculate into adulting nicely with good experiences. And usually internships come with pay in this type of city in Charlotte. More importantly, we exist to build leaders for life. That's what we exist to do. And we are a school that really embraces a one size fits one attitude. So each athlete, we really sit down and take time to understand who they are and what they need. And you will have a role within our program. And having a role, although sometimes not the NCAA score, sometimes not the conference score, but if you play your role to the fullest, you will wear a ring and you will leave a legacy bigger than anything that you could do in swimming. And again, have learned something at a much higher level than you could if you just sat in a classroom or swam in a program of a ton of people and just been another number. Here, you actually have a spot and have a place to impact others.
Well, your recruiting track record has been fantastic over the years. What are the absolute most important things you consider when deciding if you're going to recruit a particular student athlete to Queen's?
Yeah, the student athlete has to be able to articulate the why they want to come to Queen's. That's what gives us a large yield rate in coming to Queen's, is the ability to say, I want this because, and this using swimming and using the platform and knowing the history of Queen's, I will be able to achieve this upon matriculation into adulting. And we help them by providing them quite the guideline. We have the vision of we exist to build leaders for life. We have the framework of the values to build upon the values they bring from the home. And that's excellence as a lifestyle, not as an event. Communicating early and often. Character, what you do when nobody's watching. Service, urgency in the classroom and in the pool, teamwork and teamwork. And so those values then help them matriculate into being global minded, agile in their thinking, decisive in their decision making, honorably engaged, civic minded and civically engaged, and professionally adept. So when we give them that continuum or that pathway to adulting, that what happens is they usually have the aha moment to be able to tell me how they will follow that and be able to engage, leverage, and ultimately take advantage of it. And those people thrive here, But it means that when somebody doesn't, and this is, I think, what makes us different, is I really work with our coaches to be okay with telling somebody no. Is we don't have to feel an urgency at any point to say yes just because they're a fast swimmer. In fact, we spend a lot of time teaching our student athletes that they are not to leave their legacy in times, because at and no offense to others, but we will always recruit somebody faster. So your time will not last long if that's your legacy. You need to leave your legacy in leadership and moving the needle with your team. If you become better, you make your team better.
Oh, I love that. That is awesome. Although Queens is in Charlotte, North Carolina, less than 20% of your athletes come from the state of North Carolina. I believe it's for your women, it's around 10%. For your men, around 20%. You recruit not only from all over the US, but you also recruit internationally. If an athlete wants to swim at Queens, what is the best way for them to get your attention?
That's to reach out and tell us why. Give us the why, and I'm always willing to listen. And believe me, you do not have to be the fastest swimmer. Although we are all about fast swimming, you do not have to be the fastest swimmer. If you're going to make an impact and leave a legacy in this program, I can give examples up and down of people who came and did not leave 1 point on the tape, did not score 1 point, but everybody remembers them here as to the impact they made. So it's an interesting statistic, because I truly believe in my heart that Charlotte is a destination. North Carolina is a destination for people to come to. The unfortunate thing is, if you live in North Carolina, it's like cafeteria food, right? You can say it's a great cafeteria food, but if you have it every day, then it becomes monotonous. So I believe people in Charlotte want to find a destination somewhere else. And my example is always this: where do people that live in Hawaii go to? Where do they move to? I mean, if because everybody wants to go to Hawaii, everybody wants to go to, but then where do the people of Hawaii, where do they go to? So what happens is, I feel like for these many, the greater percentage of people that come to Charlotte, it's because they truly see and can see the benefits of the 14th largest city, fourth fastest growing, and all that it has to offer. Those who live here tend to take it for granted and want to go away, but then only to find it's important to get back. So that's an interesting statistic, and that's one of the things I love about Swim and Tell. I'll tell you right now, is I have this little saying that in God we trust, all others bring numbers, and I love numbers. Numbers help me make decisions. More importantly, numbers and trends help me ask better questions. And that goes back to our recruiting, is when I see a trend of going up or going down, I know that I can ask, my questions look different to that person to figure out the story and get the context that I need to find out if they're going to be a good fit.
Yeah, and I think I'm probably the biggest data nerd you'll talk to, so we share that in common. Let's talk a little bit about video. So college coaches we talk to, they're pretty split on whether or not racing videos are important when they're evaluating a potential recruit. For you, how important are videos in the recruiting process? Do you need to see a swimmer swim before you're going to make that offer or invite them for a visit?
So the answer is, I split. I sit right on the fence, but I would say I tend, if I were to look at a statistic, I'm over 50%, and I don't need a video, because the clock is the teller of all truths. And so if a person's 4'9", and they're the world record holder, I'm going to accept that and be at ease with that. Now, if they're at 4.9 and how much more improvement I can get, it may be a little bit different. But if I go and see somebody swim, I'm not always looking at how they swim either. I'm looking to see how they interact with their teammates and their family. And I'm looking for the intangibles because, again, the clock says what it says. Now, and my questions and the answers to my questions of where they are with their, when I talk to their coaches themselves and the surrounding their support staff is, I want to know more about strength, flexibility. I want to know about mitochondria DNA, about where their mom, where they fit on the food chain, where they, what if they're the oldest child, if they're an only child, if they're the middle or the youngest. I want to know more about the environment they're surrounding, that if this environment will help take them to the next level. Because I have a confidence in our strength and conditioning program. I have confidence in the culture of our program and what that looks like. And I have confidence in our ability to coach. Now, here's why. In college athletics, by the time they get to me, I'm making a grave error if I'm trying to change somebody's stroke completely, because that it's too late. What they're going to learn at up until the age of 12 to 15 is what they are. Then we build strength around it and strategy around it and build speed around it. But from there's not much. If I'm going to break somebody down, I will not have enough time in 4 years, literally, to completely change them for the most part.
Yeah, makes complete sense. Let's talk about the athletic scholarship situation at Queens. Are you fully funded, partially funded? And how do you decide how to allocate your scholarship money amongst all of your athletes?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And we in Division II, we are fully funded. In Division I, we are very close to fully funded. Well, everything changed 2 weeks ago, right? We were very close to being fully funded in the men, and we were moving up the ladder in the women, but that takes time. We couldn't just do it, but we did make a nice move up towards getting to where we need to get to. But now it all that word comes, or that phrase comes into different play, because fully funded is 30 scholarships now. And there will probably be, as of I know right now, two schools, Tennessee, I think, and Texas, I'm guessing, that have the money to do that. And the rest will find where the medium, and this is where I think your company is going to play an amazing role in helping people find that law of diminishing return and what they really get. Right now, we're the benefactors again in recruiting, going back to the recruiting of getting calls just this morning at 6:45. Hey, I have two stellar athletes that have lost their spots on a Power Four team. Do you have room for them in 2025? Now, here's the good news. In a mid-major, that we have our option, and in the ASUN, our commissioner has decided that in doing his research, and again, this could change by noontime today, but in doing their research with through the presidents and the athletic directors, that right now every school can do what they want. They can either opt in or opt out. And opting out means you just work as business as usual. You're going to work to the equivalency, and you're going to work to the however your school goes, but you can't go over 9.9 in men and 14 in women. If you opt in, you've got to opt in for all sports, and you've got to do it. You're going to limit your rosters in swimming. That is 30 and 30, unless the conference has decided differently, which we've seen recently with the SEC going to 22 on the men's side, 30 on the women's side. And they said because of Title IX and the amount of sport offerings. So there's a lot going there. So how I use my is we work because we're a very high academic school. Our women hold a 3.8 grade point average. We're very blessed that we get our women coming in, get a lot of academic money. And then we usually, if we can, add some athletic, and then we build a team around somebody getting something academic or athletic. And in the same with the men, we really build around. And then we look at AI and the offerings that you have to kind of say, can we predict through asking the right questions and through looking at the right data and trends, say, can we go ahead and bet where they'll end up in the future versus trying to do what other schools say is, you've got to be here before I can give you here. Is we try to believe in them from the start because that's what we feel is the right way to go. And it's been a winning formula for us to this point.
Yeah, you brought up the Grant House settlement, the potential decreases in available roster spots at certain conferences and schools. Personally, Swim and Tell, we've had three student athletes that are 2025s had their Power Four offers rescinded in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, and I would say that three is a representation of about per club. I mean, it's pretty amazing. One recruiting weekend, all of a sudden the talk started changing because all their friends and they wanted to commit early, real quick, because they were getting things saying, "Where are you? Do they have room for me as well?" And these are really good swimmers. But if I may get on my soapbox here a little bit about the Grant House settlement, because Grant House. First of all, Grant House, I think gets, and I say this with great care to say ignorance is not a bad word. It's just not knowing. But there's a lot of ignorance about the attacks on Grant House. Grant House is not going to bring down the NCAA. Grant House exposed what was already an underlying condition that was happening, and the NCAA owns all the responsibility for this because they were making decisions and trying to make decisions that were not fair or reflective of the student athletes' thoughts and causing people to make decisions like the one and done and the different things, having to go different routes in order to protect themselves. There's more to it, and I'm probably not articulating it correctly. But what I say is what could bring down the NCAA is what is still left in what the NC if the NCAA does not learn from their mistakes, they and continue to go down a path will be whether athletes vote to become employees or not employees. That becomes a whole different ball game. But collective bargaining is fair and is helping athletes decide what's best for them. And allows them to finish an education in order to get to the next level and do some different things. And it just makes sense. But right now, am I happy about where all the power lies? No, because all the power right now lies in the student athlete. And where that becomes dangerous is we're not doing them a favor and helping build them to be leaders. Because what happens now is, as any child is, they become manipulative just based on what they know, and they know they have the whole power. So what that is doing to the NCAA and where Grant's getting a bad rap is that's causing the NCAA institutions to have to protect with what I call it, they're hoarding dollars. So a program, if they need 1.4 million, they're looking at a program that's swimming, or 1.2 millions is swimming, and they're saying that's where I need to go if I need 1.2 million quickly, and I drop that program. But that's only because right now we're only human. If we make human mistakes, we cannot say sorry or go back and fix them. The student athlete has all the power to still collect and do everything they want. And until we get that balance of power back, and I joke with this halfway, that I think there should be two portals, one for the student athlete, one for the coaches. And that's how we get balance back, is that the student athletes can go if they want, and the coaches can put people in if they want, if they're not fulfilling the business needs. But and their obligations. And then all of a sudden, that will quickly balance everything. But until we find that balance, and I think it will come quickly, that we're going to see this big run on the portal, and we're going to see this these potential sports being cut because people have to quickly find money. But when we get the balance, it will be easier to navigate and project where we're going in the future. And that's my thought only. It's an opinion of one, and it comes from this office only.
We talked to a lot of coaches about just how everything's changing. And so many of the mid-majors, D1s, D2s, D3s, the coaches are actually excited about an increase of talent flowing into their programs. Some of the Power Four coaches, a little bit more, let's just say, uneasy about how it's changing. What's your view at Queens? How do you think you're going to benefit from these changes?
We're absolutely, and we're probably, and I say most equipped. I don't want to say we have experience in Division Two. We pretty much brought a whole nother level of talent into Division Two, and with, I mean, our vision was to, and I truly felt there's no reason we shouldn't have athletes that can't compete in Division One at level, and so. It was amazing, and we saw that. Yes, I believe there's going to be a home for everyone, and they. But what's going to have to happen here is not necessarily at the collegiate level. I believe it has to happen at the club level because a lot of times at the mid-major and at the Division II level, what we saw and battled against was a club coach wanting. Well, and I understand it, so I don't blame them, but it's very similar to high schools. They would rather see and tell and brag that they send 30% of their people to Harvard, Princeton, to the Ivy Leagues than to the other schools. And in club swimming, they would much rather say, instead of we produced athletes that accumulated $1 million in scholarships. They rather say we had 10 athletes go Division One and to the Power Four. And that seems to be a powerful thing. Sometimes we have to battle, hey, this is why we think it's right for this athlete to come here versus going to another big school. But it's obviously those coaches want their club teams to be able to say, hey, we send this many people to the Power Fours and to all the other areas. So if we can get club coaches to really buy into the right fit for the student athlete, I think we'll start to see parity and we'll start to see a lot of fast swimming all around.
I 100% agree. All right, we talked about how you approach recruiting athletes. I would like to now talk about how you develop athletes. As you are well aware, Queens took the crown last year for the top overall improvement progression for women last season, averaging a 4.6% drop in best events from high school. You compare that 4.6% drop to the D1 female average of 1.4%. And you absolutely break our scale. So let's look at some examples. Riley Heck, she comes into Queen as a freshman with a 55 flat 100 free. Her junior year, she swims that 100 free at 50.18. That is an 8.8% drop from high school. Sophia Lang has a high school best 500 free of 458. She drops over 12 seconds by her junior year to a 4.46. Those are huge drops. What are you doing differently at Queens to have so much better development than the average D1 program?
Yeah, so I think it comes to my mentor and David Marsh and working with him is we really thrive on identifying athletes who haven't that are a little bit newer to swimming and that most other people won't take a risk on. And we really we like Riley was a part-time year-round swimmer and full-time high school swimmer. And was getting pushed to swim college, but didn't even think she could handle college. And we had to really develop a plan for her and the one size fits one thing, how we would get her and navigate her without overwhelming her and burning her out. But we could see the talent in her. We could see the growth mindset, and that's again through the questions we asked. Through the relationship we built, we saw that she had a growth mindset. She was coachable. She talked not so much about swimming, but how she wanted to use swimming to become how it was going to help her career and what she wants to do. And that became very important for us. And And we really were able to we were able to develop. And we had an athlete prior to her, Daniel Malelli, who just went through the same type of improvements out of high school to make the Olympic trials, and she skipped everything, JOs, sectionals, all that to make Olympic trials as her first big meet. And one of the things she saw that we could do it, we've done it before, we could do it again. And sure enough, Riley, she's 22 mid our low mid to low in the 50 now too, and she's a captain in our program, and she is thriving. Sophie, it's funny you bring up her 500, because to me the most impressive is her mile. I believe she almost dropped a minute in her mile. But Sophie was a fighter. Sophie, because of her size, a lot of people didn't believe that they could take a risk on her at a bigger level. Sophie, I could see the potential for building some strength, and I saw an incredible range from the mile all the way down to the 100. She could swim on our relays and do some different things. She just had a mindset that was amazing. Now, Sophie is a mitochondria DNA recruit. So when I look at Sophie's mom, Co Sophie's mom was a swimmer coach. She had the pedigree, and she had the whereabouts and the intelligence to be able to be, again, a growth mindset. And so all we had to do was beat it to her and give her the platform to thrive on. And the more we gave her and challenged her with, and the more she had fun with failure, and as we tried to push her further and she would fail, but yet break through a new barrier, that she just kept getting faster and faster. If she could do another year with us, a fifth year, I have a feeling she would be even faster. But she's going on, I think, with the FBI now. So she was recruited by Secret Service, FBI, a lot of the agencies, but she's just got that mindset.
That's awesome. So we've talked about recruiting, we've talked about development, but your retention has also been fantastic. You hit a 100% return rate on your freshman women coming back for their sophomore year, multiple years in a row, and nearly 100% return for your freshman men. I think you only had one of your freshman guys not return for their sophomore season the last 2 years. What do you think are some of the main reasons you've had such good luck with retention? And do you think your success in developing time drops factors in at all here?
Yes, I believe it does. But even those who, the ones that you've talked about left, didn't leave to another program. They left, they made a choice to go and do something that was better for them, or something personal that happened. I think our yield rate comes from our recruiting. We ask the right questions. We can say no when we need to say no. And no isn't always a bad thing. The recruiting process is about finding the right place for both the athlete and the coach and the team. And sometimes I'll give you an example, is we have a basic engineering program, but we're more liberal arts with pre-med and all that. But somebody who wants to be an engineer says, "I'll change my major because I want to swim there." That's a no, because they are ingrained, their mindset, they will be bored, they will be unhappy here if they come. And so we then offer to help them find the right place. But recognizing what makes you strong as a program, and I think why we have such a good, is I started the program 15 years ago, and why we have such a good retention rate is because I know this program inside and out, and my assistant coaches know this program. Sometimes they get a little caught up and excited about how fast they are, and I have to jump in and say they're not a good fit. And it's not because they're not good people, it's just because this, we're not going to be able to give them what they need. When we do that, it really intrigues and brings in even more people. And what happens is, I usually get a big thank you when I see someone swimming well at another school saying, "Hey, thank you for your help, because this is exactly where I needed to be." And I say, "I agree, and good for you." And that's why I think we have a good retention rate.
No,
And
that's
we never stop recruiting them. That's one of the biggest things is even before this new change in NCAA landscape with the transfer portal, I've always been taught by Coach Marsh. That's how we won our first national championship, was because we never stopped recruiting our current team, and we were always respectful to the people recruited who didn't come. And when UCLA dropped their program and Nick Shackle came, and I mean, we had so many good Andrews, Michael Andrews, Todd Kannegießer, came, and Randy Hartley came from UCLA to Auburn. That helped us win our first national championship in 1997. But they came because they were all recruited by Auburn and we lost. But because of the way we respected them, and by the way, how it worked out, they, when they didn't have the opportunity at UCLA anymore, they came back to where the next, where they were respected.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about dual meets. You have a fantastic dual meet schedule this year. You have not shied away from great opponents. You schedule Power Four teams such as Virginia Tech, South Carolina, North Carolina, which I know got canceled. But you also your schedule consists of some other swimming powerhouses like UNC Wilmington, Emory, Wingate. I want to know a little bit more about how you approach dual meets. You know, one topic that comes up a lot is you know, suiting up for a meet. When do you put on tech suits? How do you approach suiting up at dual meets, and in general, how do you evaluate where your swimmers are at, you know, through the season before you ever hit those championship meets?
Yeah, good question. And I'll start first with UNC was canceled because of Hurricane Helene. Unfortunately, we couldn't get around campus. It was a little tough, but and lost some power. But Mark and I swim each other each year. Usually we have Duke on the schedule, except for this year. So we're very blessed to have people who want to come here as well, and we travel to them. But we compare. When we start the season, we explain dual meets similar to the classroom. So every dual meet is a quiz to see where we are in that phase of training. And that's how I schedule the dual meets in each phase of training. Then every our midseason is the midterm. And without a whole lot of rest, it is just to see for us to get notes on who responds really well with the rest, who keeps getting better throughout. So we'll back it up. Who's coming home strong, who's getting out fast, all the different things. We're looking at the intangibles, not necessarily the times at the midseason. And then obviously we're always preparing for the final exam, which is NCAAs or the Olympic trials, or if it's that type of year, or the conference championships for us right now being in our reclassification phase. Wearing suits has to make sense. It sometimes is driven by what other people do, and you say, hey guys, you put it in your team's hands and say they decided to wear suits. What do you want to do? You want to be in the race? How do you want to do? How do you, and you have a good, strong captain team. They say, we're fine. We're comfortable. We can live with the results one way or the other, or we're going to switch and let's see what happens. And that's good. That's one way, not my favorite way. The other way is well planned out. I'm not against suits. Like having coached with Coach Marsh and at Team Elite is that we've learned that you can wear suits and swim fast a lot. And so we're not against it. I think it has to be agreed upon the two teams that are racing and what makes sense. What do we want to see out of this quiz or our midterm, right? And if we can leave better than we came in, then that's great. Then we've done our job. And that's what we look forward to doing. And that's how we approach suits, whether we wear them. Again, we're not against them. We wear them in practice a lot. Because what I learned here about NASCAR and in NASCAR country is that you don't drive another car when you're learning how to race or getting ready for a race, because that if that's not the car you're racing, it's going to feel different. So why wouldn't we learn how and give feedback at swimming at higher levels of speed wearing the suits we're going to be wearing racing? So.
I agree with that. You know, I've always thought that coaches shouldn't want to be surprised at the end of the year, one way or the other. You should have a good feel for what your athletes are going to do when you get to that final exam.
Yeah.
And if you never put on a suit, if you're never swimming fast, you're guessing at the end.
Yeah, and I'm going to add one more little thing to that as well, is we really do our sport a disservice when we and this I'm this kind of goes back to the Grant thing. I would like to say thank you, Grant House, because what is the biggest problem in our sport right now is the stuck in the mud, we can't change. This is the way we've always done it. And where we're doing ourselves a disservice is that the younger kids these days need more instant self-gratification. And right now, imagine what it does to a kid and their parents when they pay the money they pay or invest the money they invest, invest emotionally into the years-long training. And it does, they have the flu, a cold, or something doesn't work right. And now you have to go another year before you can learn how to swim fast again or swim fast again. It's not a good feeling. And they probably will leave the sport. We need to give them something more to show them why. Like every 3 weeks, I do 10 100s kick on 3 minutes where we measure our percentage drop. And when we do that, we have a team goal. And sometimes at their hardest thing, it's hard for them to see that they could be any better, and they dropped another percentage in their kick average, or another their average has gotten better, and that is so rewarding. But you have to be able to see the progress, and that's how we're going to keep people in our sport and going. Just so that doesn't make totally not a lot of sense, but the thank you to the Grant House thing is all of this mix up, as comfortable, uncomfortable as it is. We will, if we have the right people in charge and we have the right leaders in place, we will come out better. And we always have. But if we constantly find ourselves saying, I don't feel comfortable with this because it's not the way we do it, we've got to change our mindset. Because I mean, to get TV time, to capitalize and leverage on women in sport being the fastest growing, we've got to get our women on TV more. We've got to do a lot. We've got to change our format. It doesn't do any good to have an exciting 200 medley relay up front and then 1,000 free after. We've got to find new ways to and use trends and statistics to find audiences that are excited by this. And to do this, that's how we're going to save our sport. It's not going to be by saying this is the way we've always done it.
I agree completely. I was at a dual meet last weekend and it was really exciting after that relay and then the thousand. And it
Yeah.
just sucks the energy right out of the room. And then it gets fun again.
Yep.
But I turned to the person sitting beside me and I said, did somebody just sabotage dual meets on purpose? Like, is this why do we structure it this way? And it drives me nuts. All right, I have one final question for you. Outside of swimming, what is the most fun sporting event to watch at Queens?
Women's lacrosse. I say that because my daughter just graduated, but played 5 years women's lacrosse here, and just amazing sport. We've been blessed with an amazing coach, and it just they the way they were coached and the speed at which they played the and they were fortunate to play for a national championship in D2, and do well in the ASUN immediately. It's like an orchestra. You can really, it's beautiful to watch them. And some people with men, you see a lot of hitting, and that's exciting in itself. But when you're not hitting and you have the ball flying and you have people showing up in places where you don't even expect them because that's just where they know, and the some of the shots that are taken, it's just an amazing sport of speed, eye hand coordination, everything.
Oh, that is awesome. Coach, thank you so much for spending time answering these questions. I really appreciate it. I think the people that listen to this, read this, have learned a lot more about Queens. And I'm really, really excited to see what you do in the water this year. Your recruiting class looks amazing. Your team is swimming great. I can't wait to see what you do at the end of the year.
Thank you. Have a great one.
Thank you very much, Coach.
Oh.